Thank you and good afternoon. And thank you for coming for this press briefing by the UN Special Rapporteur on the Human Rights Situation in the DPRK. Mr. Marzouki Darousman, thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
Maybe we'll take the floor for a few remarks before going to the question with, from the press.
Thank you. And and also thank you for coming by this afternoon. I will just briefly start with highlighting a few points, and then it shouldn't be more than that, 3 or 5 minutes. The main thrust of the report of this year to the committee is heavy on accountability, going out from the Commission of Inquiry's report and recommendations. It highlights the consequences of the findings of the commission that incontrovertibly and on reasonable grounds has been able to establish that denial of human rights in the DPRK amount to crimes against humanity, which is the mandate of the Commission of Inquiry that was given by the Council when it was set up last year in October. And therefore, it reflects the concerns of the international community over the past 10 years that ultimately, in a compilation of information documents accumulated over the past decade, has led to the conclusion that the situation in the DPRK merits further investigation within the framework of a criminal accountability process. The report as far as the Commission of Inquiry is concerned has been recommended to be submitted to the Security Council. This is, of course, this has been known since it was submitted to the Council in February this year. And it is now officially with the Security Council pending adoption of it as part of the Council's agenda. We did also recommend that the report be further referred to accountability mechanisms within the UN system. Now, having said that, understandably, the report to the committee this year goes out from also from related issues of having to look into the overall problem of international abductions. Taking note that in the recent, immediate past, a bilateral process is now underway between Japan and North Korea to discuss on the return of Japanese abductees, and there's of course hope that that process will lead to fruition. Those are the main issues. Apart from the fact that there has been some interesting turn of events in the past few days. And that is that, as I mentioned in my statement in the committee this morning, a meeting took place between the rapporteur and the officials of the DPRK for the first time in 10 years. So for whatever it's worth, it's notable that it took place after so many years. With that, I'll open the floor then.
Yes. Absolutely.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Dorsman. So we'll take some questions, and as usual, of course, I will ask you simply to introduce yourself and give the name of the media organization you work for. We'll start with you, Pamela.
Thank you very much, Andre Michel. Thank you very much, Mr. Special Rapporteur. On behalf of the UN Correspondents Association, I'm Pamela Falk from CBS News. And my question is, with regard to your welcoming the new engagement and the direct engagement by the DPRK in this report, when we heard the initial report, or at least the report that Justice Kirby gave, we asked him the question, about the fact that North Korea would like the recommendation of a referral to the ICC, to the Security Council, be removed, that the North Korea had asked for that, and asked what was his reaction relative to that initial report, and his answer was, no, this is the time basically to try to get this report implemented. What is, since you've had now direct engagement with them, what is your sense about their request, and did they bring up their interest in having the part of the UNGA resolution removed that recommends the referral to the ICC based on your report?
Thank you. Should I just?
Yes.
Or do we want to take a few questions?
Or we'll go one after another, because it's okay. Many people have many questions.
Fine. Thank you. Thank you very much for the question, and I think it's pertinent. The meeting yesterday afternoon was at the request of the rapporteurs, and it was unexpected that, in fact, the North Koreans took it up. But it was a meeting that 1 hour plus, that covered some basic issues, and it's been known that for so many years the ultimate test of the government's engagement with the international community would be whether or not the special rapporteur is allowed entry into the country. It was perhaps quite notable that, of course, that the North Koreans, in fact, started out with that, envisaging a possible visit, not only by the Special Rapporteur, but also by the High Commissioner and the OHCHR in Geneva, discuss about possible technical cooperation with the government. Now, with regard to the rapporteur's visit, of course, they laid it out in a way that gave the impression in one breath that by mentioning certain parts of the resolution that they thought a possible visit of the rapporteur would be enabled on the understanding that certain parts of the resolution reflect their concerns, and that was what they raised with me, and then, of course, my response was that inviting the special rapporteur is a independent issue apart from the text. The rapporteur is never ever consulted on the content of the text, if only because it reflects the resolve of the Human Rights Council to maintain the independence of the rapporteur. And therefore, the text is only shown at the very end of the process when it's about to be tabled at the committee. So that much was made clear to the delegation, and they accepted that as a procedure. So, again to respond to your question. There was discussion about possible a visit. There was a discussion about certain parts of the resolution, and so you will be able to make your own conclusions how they sort of relate to each other.
You can't not follow up on this. Did you infer from this then that their conclusion, since you can't? You are not involved in the GA, that then therefore there is no trip, that they conclude that they won't do it without a quid pro quo?
I'm not saying that. No. What I'm saying is that was the rendering
right.
of what took place. No. I hope to be able to discuss with them further on this during my stay here. And we'll see what comes out of that.
Maybe we'll move to the next question before going to the back. Shana, then Matthew. We'll come back to you.
Hi, Shauna McGee from Kyoto News. Could you tell us a little bit more about, do you actually ask to visit DPRK every year? Is that a part of your regular process? And I know that the North Koreans had asked you to make a fairer report. Is that something that's out of the question? That's one of their conditions that was explained to me. Could you address that? Thank you.
Thank you. Yes. Well, it's a standard procedure on the part of the rapporteur to every time to extend a request to the permanent missions, both in Geneva and in New York, for a meeting with the permanent mission. It's always been the case where these requests have been denied as a matter of principle. And but then again, the request is put in on a yearly basis because it's within the mandate and task of the rapporteur to try to engage the North Koreans finally address the concerns of the International Committee on the situation in the country. This time around, the request was made through the Geneva office, and a few days before the actual meeting, the confirmation was made by the North Koreans. Yes, that was also another point that was touched on in the meeting, and that is that they took exception, of course, with the COI report, because they didn't feel that it reflected their side of the story. But then again, I clarified that we had hearings in a number of places in Seoul, in Japan, in the United States, and it was a standing order that all these hearings would have to be attended by concerned parties, including North Koreans, and official invitations were extended every time to the North Koreans to testify and to bring in their version of things. They thought that perhaps a visit to North Korea would in some ways also affect the overall picture that the international community has on the situation, and therefore one of the reasons that that a visit was contemplated was that they thought this could be an opportunity to balance out, you know, quote unquote, the COI report.
Question from Matthew. Then
we'll... Sure. Matthew Lee, Intercity Press. On behalf of the Free UN Coalition for Access, thanks for the briefing. In the third committee today, as best as I could transcribe it, you said, given the intrinsic links between peace and security and human rights in the Korean Peninsula, my view is that the report should be referred to the Security Council. And what I wanted to ask you is that recently, maybe yesterday, your counterpart on Iran, Ahmed Shaheed, said specifically that he didn't think there should be any linkage between the nuclear issue as to Iran and human rights, that this actually hurts the human rights issue. And so I wanted to know, do you see it differently? Am I misreading this? Are you, when you say peace and security, are you referring to the nuclear issue? And also, Mr. Shaheed, as to Iran, has the last couple of years given in his reports the effects of sanctions on the residents of Iran. And I wondered, in your inquiry as rapporteur, do you think there's anything to that? Do you think that's something that you should look at and seek to? He doesn't get into Iran either, but he collects information as best he can from outside. What's your view of the impact of the sanctions on North Korea on residents? Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you for that question. The two objectives of referring the report to the Security Council is to, one, have the Council consider referral to accountability mechanisms within the UN system. But no less important is the second objective, and that is to finally secure a place for discussions on human rights within the Security Council. In the case of North Korea, of course, the imagery that we have, of course, is of a country that is chronically unable to secure food for its population, but at the same time, being able to build up its capability in military capability at the expense of denial of the fundamental right to food, and therefore it is a direct link there between a human rights denial and security risks that come out from a military buildup at the expense of the interest of the population to be able to feed itself. Does that answer your question?
So we'll take a question from Sanghon in the back, and then we're coming here. Sorry.
So, Mr. Durisman, if you can clarify, so where we were and on what terms did your meeting end yesterday? Did North Korea say that, the officials say that they would have to go back to their capital, for example, and discuss the possibility of a visit? Or because you said I'm not involved in the GA process, it's a separate issue, did they actually just say, okay, then while we discuss the trip or the possibility of a trip, they're no longer, you know, able to proceed further on it?
Yes. Thank you for this follow-up question. It's quite a big jump for the North Koreans to be able to say that they don't recognize the mandate, and all of a sudden being prepared to meet with the rapporteur. I'm not addressing the contradiction here, but it's a very pragmatic step that they are taking there. They didn't agree that that the rapporteur was not the mandate of the rapporteur was not related to the resolution, and therefore they thought that it would be useful for them to discuss this with the rapporteur and to have this conveyed to the co-sponsors of the resolution, which I did. And therefore, we are now in the process of this perhaps possible back and forth up until the 18th of November, which is more or less when the resolution is going to be tabled and resolved. And it's not the task of the rapporteur to be caught up in this process, and therefore my task would be just to convey the concerns of the North Koreans to the co-sponsors. But then I would have to make this final act of conveying back to the North Koreans the views of the co-sponsors. I will be seeking another meeting with them during the coming days, and leave it at that, and step back and let the matter take its course.
Just one quick follow-up. So, at this point in time, your recommendation to the General Assembly that there should be a referral to the International Criminal Court for, you know, the atrocities that you found thus far still stands. There is no, you don't plan, for example, revising that recommendation in any way. Is that correct?
Let me put it like this. The Commission of Inquiry, if we look into the recommendations as a whole, we did look into possible models of criminal accountability. In short, the ICC referral is not the only route that the Commission had recommended in its report. It also envisaged the possibility of addressing the issue through the mechanisms, standing mechanisms within the UN, in the form of tribunals that could be established to address a specific situation, and so there is this generic approach to accountability within the report that allows for alternatives for this matter to be referred to an accountability mechanism within the UN system.
Thank you for being patient. I'll start with you, and then we'll go back there. Sorry.
In the report and in the third committee today, you noted the publication of a human rights report by the DPRK's Association for Human Rights Studies. And in the report and in third committee, you said that this report can assist in further understanding of the administrative and legislative framework in the DPRK. Your COI colleague, Justice Kirby, criticized the DPRK's report, calling it a rosy report. Is this to say you, as Special Rapporteur, can find some merit in the DPRK's issued report? And can you further clarify how this report can contribute to understanding how they know human rights? And did this come up in your discussion?
Yes, thank you. Now, my mentioning about this study was in the spirit of drawing attention to the fact that more progress has taken place in the last 3 months compared to the last 10 years in terms of the openness or the readiness of the North Koreans to come out from their sort of shell, if you will. And therefore, I did mention that as just a high point of where things are. Of course, vantage point in looking at the situation is and will remain the Commission of Inquiry's report. And so it should be taken in that context of looking at the turn of events that has to have taken place in the last period.
Did you discuss their report in your meeting?
No, they didn't mention that.
Ken Okasaka from Kyoto News. In case your visit is granted by the North Koreans, is there specific places or people you'd like to visit or meet with? And do you think they will allow you to access to those places and people?
Yes, thank you. This goes a bit into the heart of the matter and relates to the first question by the UN Correspondents Club Association here that... If the invitation this is hypothetical. Yeah? If the invitation is issued, conditional on amendments on certain parts of the resolution, how do we go forward on this? The sense, of course, is that. It can't just be a visit for the sake of visiting. It needs to be a visit with a substantive and effective objective. And that would be to refer back to the Commission of Inquiry's report and put down certain stipulations that any visit would have to be undertaken with a view to allow the rapporteur access into any location, institution, which would be a primary concern of the international community. And without going to technicalities, that would be, of course, the approach that would be taken whenever such an invitation opens up.
Yes. Question in the middle.
Thank you. Go Kamashita from NHK, the Japanese public broadcaster. Could you specify whom you met exactly yesterday from DPRK's side? And also, could you give us your view why now the DPRK is changing in such positive way?
Thank you. We met with four officials. Only two were able to give their name cards. One was Ambassador Ri Hong Yo, and the other one was Counselor Kim from the Permanent Mission. Now, the reason why they responded to the request of the rapporteur came out perhaps in the discussions, and the sense that I got was that they were concerned about. Specific clauses in the text of the resolution, which was made, made clear to me earlier in my meetings with the European Union, and this, of course, referred to clauses which touched on. The culpability of the supreme leader and the referral of the report to the ICC. Now, which one is more important, I'm not in a position to say, but clearly this was brought out by the North Koreans as matters that came out quite seriously in the discussions, and I'm only surmising that that was what prompted the meeting to have been able to take place.
Carole here, and then we'll go to you.
Carol Landry from AFP. It sounds like from what you're saying that you're interested in pursuing this openness with the North Koreans, look at the idea of a possible visit, that you don't think that it's just a tactic to avoid GA resolution condemnation. Are we reading you right? Can you tell us if you think that this is a venue that should be pursued?
Yes, thank you again. It's not an easy question to answer. Should we pursue this further? Take it to the point where perhaps the invitation is issued discussions then start with how the visit should take, when it should take place, and how it should be undertaken. At the same time, having to meet the expectations of the North Koreans that their concerns are addressed with regard to the resolution. The question is how to move in tandem on this, and where would we finally make that jump and finally make a decision either to accept that or to maintain the momentum of the Commission of Inquiry's report to exert further pressure on the North Koreans to finally come to the table and start doing something about their internal issues. So this would be more of a process rather than an immediate decision that needs to be taken in either or. Because understandably, there's been a lot of skepticism about the way the North Koreans go about in their engagement, in their interaction with the international community, initiatives, but also reversals. And so there has to be some way of creating or allowing a measure of trust, but also a larger measure of verification. But it's interesting that these actions or these movements have taken place only after the Commission of Inquiry's report. I don't think it's incidental. I don't think it's something that's not related to that.
One question here, and maybe two last questions to finish.
Lisa Ignazio from La Voce di New York. I want to know what is nowadays the situation about the death penalty.
The death penalty in North Korea, it still stands. Nothing much on the ground has changed. More things have happened above ground rather than on the ground.
Yes, Matthew.
Hi, my name is Matthew Carpenter. I'm a reporter for Yomiuri Shimbun, a Japanese newspaper. What sort of feedback have you gotten from the P5 members regarding your work and talk about criminal accountability?
Yes. Well, I've only managed to have a discussion with one P5 member. And again, the tone was cautionary, but then meriting exploration. We are at the very beginning of a process. This whole thing about being invited, the rapporteur being invited to North Korea, just happened a couple of days ago. Discussions in Geneva with the permanent mission reached only up to the point where it sort of touched on possible technical collaboration. There was no mention about the rapporteur being invited. There was perhaps an indirect or direct reference to a possible visit by the High Commissioner. But as far as the rapporteur was concerned, it only came up when I arrived here and started discussions with the EU. And so I would just let things take their course at this moment, up until the time when the adoption of the resolution will take place sometime in November or December.
One question here, and the last one will be from the back. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Bora from Radio Free Asia. I have two questions. If you visit North Korea, what's the first thing to conduct or to double-check or confirm in the country? And the other one is, how highly do you see the possible visit to the country and how soon?
Excuse me, sorry. The first question is what I would do?
First thing to conduct or to do in the country. If
I were to be able to... what would I...
The first thing to do.
The first thing to do. Mm-hmm. Well, this would reflect a... It couldn't be just a snap decision on the spot. It would have to be a part of an overall program agreed on by the North Koreans from the very start. And so... obviously, the main findings of the report would be the focus of that visit, and therefore, if you look at the report, one of the main issues that in fact prompted the report. Coming out from a commission of inquiry that was set up for that particular purpose was the prison camps, of course. So that would be quite high on the list.
Maybe I suppose I will have two last questions, one from the back and then one from the left.
Carla Stay, Global Research. This is a follow-up on Matthew's question. Just for the sake of clarity, the impact of the sanctions on the food situation has never been clarified. And I understand because I tried to do some research into this that the information is denied to anyone except those in the, I believe it's the Sanctions Committee or the Department of Political Affairs. One journalist had actually tried to get information on the impact of sanctions in the case of Iraq, and she was told, but always anonymously that the impact was enormous. And so I was wondering, to what extent is the denial of the right to food a result of the sanctions and not necessarily skewed priorities in investment?
Oh, yeah. Well, the situation in North Korea, is, insofar as the food situation is concerned, has been a development in the latter years of the country. To be sure, it's not only the skewed investment scheme or policy that has prioritized military buildup at the expense of agricultural development, which led, of course, to these severe food shortages. But it would also have to be linked to calamities, climatic calamities that took place in the country during certain periods of the year. What stands out, of course, is that many other countries go through calamities, natural calamities, and come through with in terms of how they manage their food situation. What stands out with regard to North Korea is, of course, that famine occurs at the same time when they build up their military capability, and therefore this skewed investment policy stands out as the main cause of their wrong policies in addressing this issue.
So last question here, and then we have to leave the room. Thank you. Yes.
Thank you. Errol Abdovich, Republika Press. I just wondered, for the final point of clarification, if you can mention what specific part of the text of the resolution led to that new openness to say, and your meeting yesterday with four officials from the diplomatic corps here, in New York, and also based on what info or even movement, sorry for missing that probably, you also described the new openness as the best in the last 10 years, if I understood you properly. Thank you.
Well, finally, the moment of truth is clause 7 and 8 of the text, which refers to the Supreme Leader, which is clause 8, operational paragraph 8, and then 7, and operational paragraph 8 is the matter of referral to the ICC. Those are the parts of the text that they've asked to be deleted so that they would be in a position to issue an invitation.
What was your answer?
My answer was that I will convey this to the co-sponsors, which I did.
Any answer from the co-sponsors?
Well, the answer for the co-sponsors is that they needed greater reassurance that such an invitation is forthcoming before anything can be done to start looking into these clauses, which have gone through a very thorough discussions among member states of the sponsoring member states of the resolution.
Thank you very much, Mr. Derosman, for making yourself available. Thank you, all of you, for coming. That's all the time we had. Have a good day.